Hi everyone, welcome to this new episode of Luxury Insight podcast in partnership with fashionnetwork.com. In this new episode, we have the pleasure to welcome Massimo Piombini. Massimo is the CEO of Balmain, the acclaimed luxury house. Massimo will share his experience and vision of the luxury industry, its trends, its consumers, China naturally, and some amazing new projects that you will discover for the first time in this podcast.
Hello, everybody. We're here today with Massimo Piombini, who is the CEO of Balmain, one of the great French couture houses. Massimo has been CEO for how many years now?
Now is we just anniversary 2 years from April 2017 till now.
Massimo, you came on board when Balmain was acquired by Mehola, the Qatari royal family's investment. What plan did they want to put in place for Balmain?
They bought the brand at the end of 16, and I started as a board member. The idea was to develop this brand, because this brand, when they bought it, had great opportunities. Basically, there was a lot of, untapped business opportunity, like, you know, growing the retail business, developing the accessories, expanding the business in China and Asia overall, and also rebuild the online business. So overall, the brand was totally unexploited, and that's why they bought it, actually.
It's a famous couture brand, but there have been many famous Paris couture brands that have drifted and disappeared. What do you account the success of Balmain? How do you explain it's one of the ones that survived and flourished?
Well, first of all, Balmain took a very bold decision a few years ago to appoint a very young new creative director, Olivier Rousteing. When he was appointed, he was 24. The guy is not only super talented, brilliant, and also very friendly and approachable, but he's also probably the first digital designer. He was the first one to open an Instagram account. He was the first one to reach 1 million followers. Now he has 5.5. And so basically he started developing a new language for the Maison. And the language is a language that talks directly to the next generations. So, and there's a target of customer that everybody wants to approach. For him, this happened naturally, because he's one of them. And so that's the reason why I think now Balmain has not only survived, but Balmain has a bright future in front of her.
He's an enormously talented designer who has quite a rock and roll aesthetic, quite high glamour, very modern. How do you deal with him or ask him to respect the DNA of the brand, or do you just leave that up to him?
No, I mean, as you said, he has a very specific point of view in terms of positioning of the brand. Is an evolution for sure of what the original positioning of the brand from Monsieur Per Balmain. But even if Monsieur Per Balmain was always an innovator, considered an innovator, Olivier is a, of course, very modern innovator. We have a very open conversation regarding the direction that the brand has to take. He realized that, well, first of all, having a specific point of view, I think, is an advantage. And we are building from this specific point of view. We are opening to new categories, to new price points, to new end uses, to new fittings, without diluting the brand equity that he is creating. So I think it's very nice to work with him, because we have a very open conversation about the development of the brand and development of the product.
You said that he's, in a way, the first digital designer. He's certainly the first to really embrace Instagram and social media significantly as an individual designer. How has the digital era impacted Balmain? What digital policies have you introduced into the brand?
Balmain has a very, very big and wide digital audience, both the Balmain Instagram account and Olivier himself. And not necessarily the two audience overlaps. So all together, we're talking about 9 plus 6 million of followers. So for us, the problem when we started working around this brand was not like building a new audience, but was creating a way to monetize the audience. How we can bring such a huge amount of people to buy Balmain, because most of them they cannot afford, because Balmain was and still is a very expensive brand. So we are now without we are adding categories, we are doing new products that will allow people with maybe a less spending opportunities to get close to Balmain. Maybe they can buy sneakers, they can buy jeans, they can buy t-shirts, and then they can grow into the brand. And this is something that digitally for us is working very well. Please consider that 25% of the revenues of the company are coming from online business.
Already. That's not just your own online business. No. That's also with the big e-tailers like Net-a-Porter.
Exactly. Our online business counts for probably 5%. Yeah. Of the total business of the company, while the rest of the business online is generated by third parties, onliners like Net-a-Porter and so forth.
The big buzzword in the last few years has been millennials, this new generation. How do you see their consumer purchasing habits changing, and what trends do you see in the future?
Well, while I believe that the first physical contact with the brand, in most of the cases, happens in a physical store, the first contact. The next generation are probably turning this physical content into digital experience in the second or third purchase. So this has an impact in our distribution strategy, because our brand doesn't have a lot of retail stores, and we will never have the number of stores that only 5 years ago we would probably add. Now we are opening 30, 40 stores in key location in a very visible street.
Like where?
Like Saint Honoré in Paris, like Hong Kong Landmark, like Madison Avenue in New York. But at the same time, our development will highly be skewed into a selective wholesale distribution. And with selective, I mean the one that can give us visibility and a digital experience. Because now all the wholesalers are turning into a multi-channel experience.
Which people are you talking about? Which
can be from the traditional onliners, but also to people like, I don't know, the Saks or the Neiman Marcus, that has a strong business also with Saks.com, Neiman.com, Harrods.com. So everybody is now, organizing themselves in order to have both channels under control.
That's a slightly different business model than the dominant model we saw in the last 20 years, which was top brands building their own boutique and trying to control the retail 70%. Why have you made that change?
Well, first of all, what I found was a business that was completely like almost 95% wholesale business.
Yeah.
So I started from this position.
Yes.
So in our business plan, we are thinking that at the end of the period, that will be 2021, the split between retail and wholesale will be probably 60-40. 60 wholesale and 40 retail. Still, wholesale will have the lion's share of the business. Yeah. Considering that wholesale is now reaching fringes of clientele that will be very difficult for us to reach with our own stores, including the online business that they can generate. And also, today in the market, there is an excess of offer vis-a-vis the real demand of luxury good. So I think that, keep building store and investing your own CapEx is very risky as a strategy. So I think that in this way, I can grow the business in a healthy way without putting the risk, too much risk on the shoulder of the investors.
The other buzzword in the recent past is artificial intelligence and people using algorithms and understanding the consumer. How has data played a role in forming your strategy, and what way will you use it in the future?
Okay, technology has always been an important and a key word for us, considering our digital, background. We are testing an artificial intelligence system to evaluate the efficiency of our Instagram posts.
Ah.
Yeah, there is a system that, you know...
called?
iCrystal.
iCrystal.
That has been developed by a genius guy in from Albania, but he lives in Italy. And this guy is now giving you the opportunity to install a software, an artificial intelligence software, that you can communicate with him. Basically, you talk to your computer, you ask questions, and the computer is answering to you specifically on the efficiency of the Instagram activities that you have. And this is giving us a lot of information regarding where you post, the location of your post strictly related to the location of your purchases.
Ah.
The time of the day where your posts are more efficient, meaning when your posts are getting more likes. You can geolocate your post in order to have a better result in terms of, you know, turning posts into sales. So all this is something that we are evaluating at the moment. We are creating our own system, building on his system. I think we're going to be ready at the end of this year.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And it's not expensive, actually. This system is very approachable and costs less than $100 per month.
Nothing.
$100
is very small. China. The great market of today, it's now, for LVMH, it's now practically past the United States. For many companies, that is the case. How do you see that develop? How do you see consumer taste changing in China? How do you use technology specifically for this giant new market?
Well, first of all, consider that China for us was one of the untapped opportunities because we basically didn't have any business there. And so this is crazy because, as you said, every luxury brand today has like the majority of their sales coming from Asia, inbound and outbound. We are now just started opening stores here and there, but still a very limited number. But Chinese customers, they love Balmain. Because a lot of Chinese customers are shopping at our Balmain store in Europe. So we are now have a selected, very selective approach as far as opening stores. And we are now developing a digital strategy in conjunction with WeChat. So basically you could buy from WeChat soon, Balmain. And also we are developing an agreement with Pavilion that is going to be the luxury mall inside of Alibaba. It's a digital luxury mall.
A digital luxury mall.
So basically you can buy, the real problem in China and the real opportunity, but at the same time, the real problem is the online business. Because online business in China is huge, but it has been very difficult for every international brand to do business there.
Why?
Because they have some barriers at the entrance of this country that are digitally impossible to overcome. And so Net-a-Porter, Farfetch, everybody tried and really never succeed. The only opportunity today is to make a big business there, to make an agreement with Alibaba. Alibaba was always known for, first of all, mass market business and counterfeit. Now they are launching this new digital luxury mall called Pavilion, and we are considering to join them, and we will be one of the few brands that will sell online through Alibaba in this Pavilion.
Oh, wow. And you expect very rapid growth.
Let's say that there are two opportunities there. One is the size of the business, and two is the security that you're not buying a fake. And this is very important for China.
How do you see tastes changing in China?
Honestly, China was always a logo-driven, accessory-driven market. Now they are becoming more and more sophisticated. They are buying a lot of ready-to-wear also. I remember in my previous experience in Valentino, because I joined before Balmain, I was in Valentino, Chinese became the first nationality for haute couture. That is impossible to think. You know, usually haute couture was like a very small business reserved to very few people, families from the Western world or Middle East. And now Chinese are also becoming important customer for haute couture. So it's definitely evolving and becoming more and more sophisticated.
Where do you see the main growth for Balmain in the future. Let me preface this by saying, if you're talking about reaching millennials, younger people with less money, you're saying you're reaching with T-shirts.
Sneakers.
Yeah, thing like this. Your average price point must be lower. How do you see that impacting growth?
Well, first of all, you know, the biggest opportunity for us is to develop the accessories.
Yeah.
And the accessory means bags, shoes, and, you know, small leather goods, gift, and also sneakers.
Yeah.
So that's for us is the most important growth opportunity for the next 5 years, both in retail and in wholesale. So why, when we fix that, I think I will achieve my goals. Then the second wave of growth has to be decided. My first goal is to break this famous $500 million sales. And I have a very healthy ready-to-wear business now, both for men and ladies, but I need a strong accessory support. And this is happening. It's happening step by step, but it's happening. So that's it.
You work effectively for one of the, right, possibly the richest family in the world. I mean, people talk about Bernard Arnault and LVMH being very rich, but the Qatari royal family logically would be even richer. Do you think that makes... allows you to have a much more long-term view of and take a more rational approach. You're not under pressure to hit numbers and flip the company in 5 or 10 years.
I wouldn't say so, meaning they are ultra-rich for sure, but the way they manage their investment is very disciplined. And they have a committee of professionals that are not influenced by the amount of money that the family has, but the return on the investment that they made. So I am managing my company. For sure, I have the benefit to build the business thinking about the long-term plan for the business. I'm not under the pressure to deliver like EBITDA in the next 6 months because they have to resell the company.
Yeah.
That's not our situation at the moment. But I have a business plan with sales and EBITDA numbers that I have to reach. And I don't have a limited amount of resources in my hands. I have the possibility to propose important investment that if they make sense, they will follow up with us.
There are millennials listening to this conversation, and I'm sure they'd be very curious to know how you become the CEO of a top 20 or 50 luxury brand in Paris. Tell us a little bit about your
myself
career path.
Well, first of all, I'm 59, so okay. I'm not a young kid. I've been working in this industry since the beginning of my... Actually, I had my first years after the college and after the MBA, I work in finance and marketing. But then since 30 years, I'm working in the luxury industry. And I work for Bulgari, for Gucci, and now for the Mayhoola Group, okay? I've always been following the commercial part of the business. And then I started having not executive board members role in the companies of Mayhoola. And then they knew that I wanted to grow. And as soon as they got the opportunity, they offered me the opportunity to be CEO of Balmain. Because they knew that from Valentino, I couldn't go anywhere staying in Valentino. So as soon as they got the opportunity, they offered to me. And I was very pleased.
Yes, of course, Mayhoola's other big investment, most significant, is Valentino. At the time when they bought it, we don't know the exact price, but it was something like
720 million euros.
720 million euros. And that was something like nearly three or four times the annual turnover of the company at the time.
No, it was twice the annual turnover and was probably 15 times the EBITDA.
Okay. But people thought they'd paid quite a high price. There was a bidding, not a bidding war, there was a sealed bids for the company, if I remember.
And I disagree, by the way.
You don't think you paid a high price?
No.
No. With hindsight, yeah.
No, because from inside,
yeah,
we knew that the process of repositioning the brand was well advanced.
Yeah.
The accessory
business... Because you worked for Valentino before me.
Yeah, I worked for since 2008.
There. Okay, so you were there 3 years...
The company was sold in 2012.
Yeah, okay, three or four years.
Four years. Yeah, yeah. And in this... 4 years before Mayula,
yeah.
we fixed the retail business, we fixed the accessories, we fixed the organization of the company. So when they bought it, they bought something that was already working. They accelerated the growth of the company.
Yeah.
But the stage of the company when they bought Valentino was very different from the stage of the company when they bought Balmain.
Okay.
Balmain, they bought like Valentino 4 years before.
Okay.
So they almost bought an empty shell with a great designer, a great name, and that's it.
Yes, in many ways they were buying the designer because he had such positive reviews, he had such impact, he was dressing major stars.
Yeah. And also the business he was super young,
yeah.
so with a great future in front of him.
What do you think you've brought to Balmain?
I think that my I don't know, maybe you should ask this question to somebody else, but I think that we brought some discipline, some organizations, some methodology, some procedure, and obviously on top of this, a vision. And the vision was impacting distribution, product, and communication, the three major drivers for growth. This is what I think I brought. I also brought with me, or I built in these 2 years, a great team.
Yeah.
Now I think I have just completed the first line of reports, and I have a great team working for me. So we are now organized to hit very important results without changing my team. I have good talents with me.
Do you? It's kind of remarkable if you look at history in of fashion in the last 10 or 20 years, certainly since 2008 when the crisis hit, and economies since then, many of them have had slow growth, and many industries have, our own industry, the media, has gone through a terrible crisis. That luxury has boomed throughout this and has grown at double digit. It's apart from Silicon Valley, it's one of the few industries that have had. How do you see that progressing in the future?
You know, the growth of the industry, in my opinion, came mainly for because new geographies and new nationalities arrived into the business. Because the big development that the Asian market had in these last 10 years was the major element of the growth.
Yeah.
Now, we still have a growth. It's more moderate versus the past.
Yeah.
It's still working. I mean, there are still companies like, look what Gucci did in the last 3, 4, 5 years. So, and they were starting from a very high base of 3 billion euros.
Yeah.
So there are still huge growth opportunity accordingly to the quality of your job. If you do a good job, if you speak the right language, if you deliver the right product, every brand can make it.
Oh.
I mean, and especially my brand that has is one of the most wanted brand in the market, is one of the most visible brand in the market, is one of the most or the coolest brand in the market, thanks to Olivier mainly.
Yeah.
But still, we were not able to transform this into business so far, and this is happening now because the brand is growing 20-25% years on years since the brand was bought. So as soon as the accessory will kick in, you and I, we will celebrate around a bottle of wine a big growth
in a hotel cost. This week, for once in Britain, the conversation is not about Brexit, it's about Extinction Rebellion, about, you know, a mass movement about the environment, and it's a growing global concern, and it seems very much a big concern for the generation millennial, much more than our generation, and happily so. What are you doing to address that issue of sustainability in fashion and luxury?
Well, they say that there are two major trends for the next generation.
Yeah.
One is sustainability, and the second one is fitness. We can also talk about fitness.
We're going to talk about that.
but as far as sustainability, I mean, we just hired the I don't even have a title for her. She will be the head of the sustainability for Balmain. She will join us in a month. Consider that for me. When I joined the brand was like, as I told you, an empty box.
Huh.
So we need to literally build department by department from scratch.
Yeah.
And now is the time of the sustainability. So we hired this woman that was the head of sustainability for Chanel.
Huh.
So she's starting with us, and she will organize all the operations around the idea of sustainability. But I just want to say something. Sustainability is not just about the way you do your product.
Yeah.
Sustainability is about is a culture. So she will have a cross-functional role together with the HR also, because we want to have a sustainable culture also in the company. The way the quality of the life of people working at Balmain has to follow this sustainable approach. So I'm really very keen to do that. So it's not about like, okay, producing your leather in a very sustainable way or using certain kind of, you know, colors that are like not very chemical driven or whatever. It's also the quality of our life in the company. You want to join us because we have a very healthy and sustainable way of working together. And this looks like an abstract concept, but it's not.
I have interviewed hundreds of CEOs in my time. At my age, I'm 63, a little bit older than you. And I would say, almost without doubt, that you're probably the fittest CEO that I've. So you have a second life. You have an evening job. Can you tell our audience about that?
Well, my passion has always been, since I was a kid, sports and fitness. And so finally, three years ago, I realized my dream. That was to open my first gym in Italy. And now we have two in Milan and we are opening in Paris. I am the owner of the license for Barry's Bootcamp in Italy and France. I imported the concept from the United States with a bunch of friends and partners. And we are now experiences a very strong success in this.
How does its concept differ from other gyms?
First of all, you don't pay any subscription fee. You pay if you use it, and this is the first thing. Yeah. Second are only classes that you can have in a room that we call La Chambre Rouge, the red room, where there is music, trainers, and you work out for an hour like going to a party. For you, you finish the hour and you don't realize that an hour passed because you have a lot of fun working out together with people with a trainer. And then there is the overall experience, the sense of community, the sense of belongings to this kind of concept that is really, you know, is really giving you a concept of being good and feeling good. It's a boutique business. It's not a big gym. It's only 400 or 500 square meter. The boutique fitness is the future. The big surfaces are suffering. The boutique fitness is the future for the fitness. So we are having a lot of fun and we are enjoying a lot of positive experiences.
Just so our audience know, we are here, our podcast is taking place on the Rue Saint-Denis in the offices of our podcast partner, Luxury Insight. And your new Barry's Gym, Barry's Bootcamp, will be located where? Just around the corner, Rue Rémur number?
Rue Rémur number 8692. Okay, so right. Around the corner from Luxury Insight. So all the people from Luxury Insight has to come to work out for us.
Okay. Well, look, it's been fantastic talking to you, Massimo.
Thank you, likewise.
Massimo Piombini, an Italian who has been a great success story in one of the most French of all Parisian couture brands, Balmain.
Thank you so much, Godfrey, and I really appreciate this time together.
Our pleasure.